People Helping People, a program bridging the community with local organizations and nonprofits making a difference in the Bay Area. If you or someone you know would like to get your messages on People Helping People, please email us at contact@poly923fm.com or desipeoplehelpingpeople@gmail.com. Here are your hosts, Larry Walling and Greg Pirillo.
Hello and welcome to People Helping People on Bali 92.3 FM. My name is Greg with my co-host, Larry.
Yeah.
My
you
man.
You almost forgot my name again. You said
no,
you.
I was going to say my dear friend again, but I think I've said that consecutive weeks.
Good morning.
It's nice to have you, my friend.
It's always nice to be here, isn't it?
Well, this show is our chance to really shut off everything else, all the noise around us and
yeah.
Try to do the right thing and talk about things that are affecting, you know, us and people around us and the mm-hmm. community. And I think sometimes we sort of wait to see what we're going to have. If we don't have a guest, we'll say like, you know, today we'll kind of see what's affecting us or what we need to talk about that day.
Really, it's no shortage.
It's funny how this today, it's almost like we knew without knowing what we were going to have to talk about because of life's happenings and events and mm-hmm. things that have happened beyond our control.
Yeah.
Which is always sort of, I guess, therapeutic for us to do. But it's unfortunate that we have to have conversations about mental health and suicide because it's happening far too often around us these days. I don't think it's ever been like this.
I've never seen it like this ever. Can't remember it.
How could it have happened? When did this happen? Where so many people are so burdened by life that no matter what they have around them and who they have around them and the feelings of hope that people have, everybody has at some point. Mm-hmm. There's always hope, right?
Yeah.
No matter how dark your days are and how sad you are, there's always those moments when you have hope and you feel like things are gonna be okay. And even if it goes back to the darkness, you still have those rays of sunshine, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is it that so many people find the alternative to living as the way to way to get out of this and the alternative to carrying on, knowing the people you leave behind are now burdened with your demise?
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? Where does this start, Larry? For people who are not only those who have family and loved ones who commit suicide and friends, but also those that are in those dark places and the ones that are having these struggles. Where do we begin?
I don't know. I mean, as much as we can try and be there for them, I mean, of course you try to prevent them from ever getting into that kind of frame of mind to begin with. But I guess to try and be a, what do you call it, a preemptive mm-hmm. about it, always with the people that are in your orbit and close to you, always just be available to them, always never judge them for their thoughts or even their actions. Because a lot of times they're not, they can't help it. It's so easy to judge. And I know I was telling you a
we
story.
We always judge.
Yeah.
We do it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was having lunch and I told you about that girl that came up to our table. I didn't judge her, but some people that I was sitting with, and I'm not going to mention names, kind of did. Not for her personally, but her actions for coming up to us when we're eating. Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the only thing I can think of doing is just love the people around you, you know, just really love on them and always try and sense if something might be going on. You had said it earlier, you lost a good friend that took his life.
I was going to tell this story. So when I started in radio back in 1999 as a full-time music director and assistant program director in New Jersey called WBBO, a station down there. And I started and I became very close with a bunch of the representatives from the record labels because it was all based in New York City. So they were a half hour, 45 minutes from where I was working. And I used to see these guys and speak to them once a week, and they try to get, you know, our station to play their records and their songs. I became very close friends with a whole group of these guys. They were all really coming up at the same time, myself and like all, about a group of like 15 or 20 of these reps around the same age. Mm-hmm. We all became very close, and this particular guy, Joe Rainey, was working for Capitol Records. He was the East. He was pop promotion on the East Coast. He was sort of like a junior, a junior rep at the time, or a very young rep. He became a close friend of mine, and you know, we spent a lot of time together, and especially being in close proximity with one another. And over the years, we both kind of grew through the industry ourselves. You know, we kind of went in different directions over the years. He stayed in pop promotion. He's the VP of pop promotion at Capitol Records. So he moved right up the ranks, and I went on to do other projects like my own record label and working concert festivals and filming, and then came back into radio in a field that he wasn't in because I don't deal with pop records anymore, pop radio. But I stayed in touch over the years, and this is the guy who everyone who knew him, and you'll go back and read the tributes online, everyone who knew him would say that he was the happiest guy in the room, the life of every party, the center of every bit of attention in the room. And he was the guy who made everyone he was with feel like they were the most important person in the world. You know, he was that guy. He made you feel that you were the most important person in that room, no matter where you were. And he had this way about him that just made people happy. He made people laugh. And I never saw him down once. I spent many nights with him where we'd hang out, and we were going out in the city at that time in New York City. And, you know, when he would have a few drinks, sometimes he would get a little more sentimental and you could see how huge his heart was. But he very rarely got to a point where you ever thought he was depressed in any way. He was going through some custody battles. He had gotten married several years back and had two small kids. And he was going through a divorce and a pretty ugly custody battle. Apparently having some issues with an incident at work. And you know, nowadays when people go public with things, it becomes an embarrassment and a stain on their their record. And apparently there was something that was about to come out. He might have been losing his job because of it. So he started to drink again after he had stopped for many years. And apparently he was in a very bad spiral. No one really knew. Only a very few people had any idea. And he killed himself on Friday evening. He slit his wrists in his home and found out on Saturday. And it was just didn't sink in. You know, all weekend I was working on my own projects. And I kept like returning back to it. Like, this can't be right. It can't be real. This guy of all people, how did everyone miss this? How could no one have seen that he was that desperate for help? Mm-hmm. And it really comes to the same point. It's like you might think by looking at somebody and looking at their pictures on Facebook or speaking to them in the 5 or 10 minutes when you cross paths that everything's great. You might look at them from your perspective and think nothing is wrong.
Yeah.
But those people, the ones that are in the dark places that don't speak about it or are holding something in, maybe they just need to be asked. Maybe they just need to be told, hey, you seem fine, but if anything's ever wrong, if you ever need to talk, let me be that person. You know, I'll be non-judgmental. I won't hold it against you. I won't, you know, look at me as somebody who you could talk to without fear of it getting anywhere beyond me.
Yeah.
Because somehow or another, there are people out there that we keep hearing their families and loved ones say, I never saw any signs. And this is one of those guys. No one saw the signs.
Yeah.
And it really makes you wonder how many of us are out there struggling like this and just never say anything, no matter what they might lead you to believe with their actions and their personalities or their happiness. They are likely, or they might be, in a bad place. There's just so much of this happening now. There's so many things that pile on us, the pressures that we have as a society, in our jobs and our lives and what we're expected to do and what others' expectations are of us.
Yeah, I think it all comes into play. It's all of those things and so much more. The world as it is today has never been in the state that it is today.
I don't think it's, I mean, I'm sure over the years, I'm sure we could look at statistics of suicides over the years. Mm. I really do think it has to be linked to the connectivity people seeing other people.
I think so.
And, you know, going online and seeing that everybody's life seems better than theirs, and the trolling and the negativity around us,
yeah,
and the constant barrage of real life that happens to us that we sometimes can't get away from, and where the alternative to living becomes the best option. And I don't know how that could ever happen.
I don't know.
And I don't know how you could leave behind small children. But that's how sad and dark it got.
It is. But I mean, and we've spoken about this before, and I think a lot of times what we forget is that they're in a certain frame of mind. They have to be.
Yeah.
So, and we're not in that place.
Yeah.
So when they do that, they're in a different place altogether. So we think the way we usually think, which I guess would be rational,
mm-hmm,
and you would look at them and say it's not rational. So just because of that one thing alone, you know, you can't really judge them or hold
right.
them accountable because of the state of mind that they're in at that very time.
And for anybody yeah. to get angry, I mean, you get angry because you're sad, but for anybody
yeah.
to not really put yourself in their shoes because you just simply can't understand what they're feeling. I want to mention this. I'm going to say it a couple times during the show. There are places you go, even if you don't have family or loved ones that you could speak to. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is the first thing you'll find when you Google suicide.
Do we have that on our website, by the way?
Yeah, I believe we do. We'll
okay,
double check that.
From past shows.
But the number is 800-273-8255. 800-273-8255. But I'll tell you that you could just Google suicide
yeah.
and you'll get that number. Suicide Prevention Lifeline. There's also the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, which is a great site, AFSP. There's the Suicide Prevention Resource Center. There's a help guide, which I'm going to talk about in a little while. How to help someone who is suicidal and save a life. You know, sort of understanding suicide. Myths that are associated with it, like for example, most people who talk about suicide won't really do it. That's something I've heard a lot. That's nonsense.
Yeah, that is nonsense.
Then you have to live with the fact of this person told me that, and I still
didn't do anything.
It. Yeah, almost everyone who attempts suicide is giving some clue or warning. Don't ignore even indirect references to death or suicide. Statements like "you'll be sorry when I'm gone" or "I can't see any way out," no matter how casual or jokingly it's said, it indicates something serious. Another one I wanted to say, if a person is determined to kill him or herself, nothing is going to stop them. Even the most severely depressed people have mixed feelings about this. No one wants to do this. They're wavering usually until the very last moment. Most suicidal people do not want death. They want the pain to stop. The impulse to end it all, however overpowering, does not last forever. So there are, I said that earlier, even as dark as you might be,
mm-hmm,
there's usually, it's an impulse. And once that impulse lifts, something happens to make you feel better for a moment or two or three.
Yeah.
That will go away, and you have to hope that that person can fight through those moments and times to get to the sunshine. But there's so many people that I've known or I've heard of. I had another friend about a year earlier, a friend of mine, Tommy Page, who was another guy in the industry, who was another happy man who everybody thought was so great, he hung himself. He was a teen star, a musician who had a massive, successful number one record in 1989 or 88. Lived with the crash of his career because he was like a boy band kind of guy. And then he found his career again in working in the record industry in the mid to late 90s and was at the top of his game, had a husband and a family, and he killed himself after pressures of life and his job. And again, another one of those situations where no one knew, no one had any idea.
Yeah.
So it seems to me that there are a lot of people out there who don't see the signs, but that means we have to be almost proactive in our lives. Just go to the ones you love. You could start right there. Go to the people closest to you and say, I know nothing, I don't know if anything's wrong with you, and I mean, nothing might be wrong, but I want you to know if you ever feel down or dark or sad, or if you feel like you're thinking of any other way,
yeah,
you need to talk to me. I'm here for you, because I feel like at least if they know, you're willing to listen, and you won't be shocked and appalled at the fact that they're talking about such a, because a lot of people feel it's a burden they're putting on someone else.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, if we care about people, we always think that we're going to be a burden if we share something that's not warm and fuzzy.
And you've said this, too. A lot of it does, there's different reasons. There's mental health, right? There's mental health. There's bipolar disorder. Yeah. There's manic depression. Yeah. There's also PTSD.
Right, exactly.
Which is a whole other subject.
Big thing.
People that have survived a traumatic experience in their life, and they're now dealing with the consequences of that. And sometimes everything's fine for long periods of time, and then something triggers
it off. Yeah.
Those feelings. Uh-huh. And in those moments, their actions are somewhat beyond their control. And I think that's what we were saying earlier. It's like you're almost out of your own body, right? You're living, you're reliving a moment that you hate and despise.
Yeah.
And regret. So there's different ways that we can get there, and that people but I think mental health, mental illness awareness, or mental health awareness, I should say, and PTSD are huge. If you know people struggling with those things, those are, very fragile souls that need to be coddled.
They are. And you know, the other thing is that they never want to hear from us, me, you, that we understand. It's just like me saying,
they don't want to hear it?
They don't want to hear it.
What do they want to hear?
Because they say, you don't know what it's like. How could you understand? You've never been there, of course. It's true. It's like me saying, I understand what it's like to have a baby.
Well, so you're basically saying you should say, I don't know what you're going through, but
right,
I'm here for you.
Right. My own daughter said that to me.
Right.
So she, she struggles with PTSD. I won't mention her name.
And she said, you don't understand.
Don't say you understand, Dad, because you can't. You don't know what hell it's like going through this. And I said, you're right, I don't. I have, and I did say this, I said, I have experienced trauma. I did, in my youth. But it was a different kind of trauma. But still, I could understand, and this is what I meant.
It's relatability in a way?
Yes, because of the trauma that I experienced. But I'm made differently. I'm not the same. I'm not the same type personality. And you and I both know this about each other.
Yeah.
We're very empathetic. We're sensitive types of guys. Mm-hmm. We're very sensitive. So that's unusual for a guy.
Yeah.
To be that kind of sensitive. So anyway, and it's for that reason too that I can try to understand or I understand. But in reality, I don't. And you can't. And I think when people, we don't ever say that meaning to offend them. But this is something you guys out there in the audience have to remember. I mean, I'm going through it with my own daughter right now. I'll tell you for a fact what it's like through her and a good friend of mine that I'm not, I don't know that well, but we've become very close. He really opened up to me. He's got PTSD for other reasons. He was in Afghanistan twice. He saw a body parts of his best friend in a plane crash, and he had to identify his best friend. Anyway, it happens for different reasons why these people have what they have, but we all deal with these things differently.
Right.
So the only thing I would really urge you guys to do, us, all of us, is that if you know somebody that's struggling with depression or PTSD or anything like that, mental health, anything like that, try not to say that, because for some reason it's like
trigger.
They're offended by it.
And it's crazy because I know I've had, we've talked about it. There's even my own life. I've never thought about that. It's never been even an option or a thought in my head personally. But I've been in some sad places. I remember when I was like 18, 19, 20 years old, I remember being very sad and depressed. And I almost romanticized it at that age, because I felt like it was comforting to be in that place. I was learning a lot about myself too as an empathetic person, and didn't realize that I was an empathic person until more recently. But at that time, I kind of was learning about myself and I found comfort in it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got through it and I had a lot of good years and successful years. And then, when around 30, I had another bout where I, going through some downtime in my downturns in my life. And it was all, again, nothing dark, but it was just, more melancholy.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the recent year, I would say I've had, those moments where I just really can't explain it. I think it's just life. I think life has, sometimes it deals you unwanted circumstances and, you have to sort of manage those, but sometimes it's easier to just kind of allow yourself to fall into a funk than it is to directly handle them. And I think it's talking to people like yourself. And
yeah.
Last week or a couple weeks back, I spoke to you. I sat, just good to get it off your chest. And it lifts a lot of that stress and pain,
mm-hmm.
Just getting it off your chest. And
yeah.
I think that's why those who are even in a worse place, the suicidal thoughts, sometimes just lifting some of that burden from them by talking to them is enough, at least enough to get them through to the next day and then hopefully the next day.
That's true.
And then you hope that people will eventually come around when things start to turn, you know, and you hope that they will turn. One of the things here is the warnings of suicide. Most suicidal individuals, they give signs of their intentions. The best way to prevent it is to recognize the warning signs, right? And how you respond to them, like you said. If you believe a friend or family member is suicidal, you can play a role in prevention by pointing out the alternatives, showing you care, and getting a doctor or a psychologist involved. Major warning signs include talking about killing or harming oneself, talking or writing a lot about death or dying, and seeking out things that could be used in a suicide attempt, such as weapons or drugs. They're even more dangerous if the person has a mood disorder such as depression or bipolar, alcohol dependence, which is what my friend apparently had,
mm-hmm.
Or has suicide runs in their family and family history, or they have attempted it in the past. So, but a more subtle but equally dangerous warning sign of suicide is hopelessness. There's studies that have found hopelessness is a strong predictor of suicide. People who feel hopeless may talk about unbearable feelings, predict a bleak future, and state they have nothing to look forward to. That's one of those things. If you notice somebody feels like they are just at a dead end and they just don't feel nothing's going right, their job, their personal lives, their marriages, their relationships, those people are
yeah.
very prone to these feelings. Because they don't feel like there's a way out of it. If they don't feel like something's turning and they're things feeling somewhat positive about things turning around, then there's a chance that you could be dealing with somebody who is a closet suicidal.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's the word I'm looking for.
Well, it's descriptive enough, I think.
Mood swings are another big one. It's like you notice people going from super high to super low, outgoing to withdrawn or whatever. Sometimes you'll see them kind of drop away day-to-day activities and not care what they look like. These are little things you could kind of look at,
yeah.
and it may mean nothing in the case of who you're looking at. But would you rather be overly cautious and say something, or would you rather regret that you didn't do anything when you did recognize one of
Correct,
these signs?
Yeah.
That's to me where it comes in. It's like, do you want to say, I don't want to say anything and rock the boat, everything seems fine.
Right.
And then something happens and you're left to say, I could have said something that might have made the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that alone should get
yeah.
you to say something.
I totally agree. We had an email from a person who actually did take her life.
Mm-hmm.
And she, it was big news. It happened up in Bodega Bay. But she actually wrote us an email, and we read it on the show. And she did eventually take her own life. But she was addicted to opiates. And for her, there was no way out. I mean, because pain governed her whole lifestyle. And even people got tired of being around her
and
because
what
of
sucks
that.
Is those opiates give you that temporary feeling
yeah.
of joy,
well,
and then comes with the disaster of the aftermath.
Well, the thing is that they took them away from her, and that was the only thing that relieved her pain. That was it.
Uh-huh.
So she was able to function when she had the help of that. But they stopped prescribing a certain type of opiate to her, and nothing else worked. And she eventually took her life. So, obviously in her situation, nobody could really understand because they weren't going through what she was.
Mm.
And she, eventually she did that. So, and like you said, a feeling of hopelessness because in her case, there wasn't anything to look forward to.
Yeah, and that's scary.
Yeah.
Let me say, for those of you that are curious or would like to know more, ways to start a conversation about someone you fear might be suicidal, and questions you can ask, is to go in line with what you said earlier. Ways to start the conversation: I've been feeling concerned about you lately is a good way. Recently, I've noticed some differences in you and wondered how you were doing. I wanted to check in with you because you haven't seemed yourself lately. Those are three ways you can kind of just introduce the idea. Questions you could ask. When did you begin feeling like this? Did something happen that made you start feeling this way? How can I best support you right now? That's a big one. Have you thought about getting help? I think, how can I best support you right now? What could I do? Whatever that might be. What you can say that helps. You are not alone in this. I'm here for you. You may not believe it now, but the way you're feeling will change. That's something I really do believe in.
I think that's a big one.
Here's one that you said. I may not be able to understand exactly how you feel, but I care about you and want to help. That was exactly what you were saying. Mm-hmm. Don't say you understand. When you want to give up, tell yourself you will hold off for just one more day, hour, or minute, whatever you can manage to get you through that moment. I think that's another good one too. Whatever it is, no matter how badly you want to give up, remember, let me see if I can just get through the next hour. Let me get through this hour, and then we'll see how I feel.
And hopefully that'll be a bridge.
Yeah, and maybe at the end of that hour, you'll give yourself another day. Mm-hmm. It's hard, man. This is hard. It's a conversation that you don't want to have, but you got to take this person seriously, because there's too much. You have to be sympathetic. You have to offer hope. There's too much out there to drag us down. You need people to step up in their lives and recognize what's happening with your loved ones. You might think it's all good. You might think there's no reason. This person has it all. They have a job, they have a house, they have a family. You don't know what they're going through internally. We all have those days. There's days where I feel sort of hollow on the inside, right? And yet no one around me would know, because I'm not walking around saying it.
Right.
So, you know, you have those days. And granted, for me, it's not anything more than just one of those days. And you've had those days as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But
there's
no way you can expect people to predict there's something wrong, but just ask the questions. If you notice anything that's askew, ask questions. Mm-hmm. Be there. Just too many people, I'm hearing it all the time, it's so many people that are just giving up.
It's hard for me. You know, you and I have opened up to one another, and that's a good thing. But it's really hard for me to do that. I mean, I don't typically do those types of things. I'm very much inwardly focused.
Me too.
Pretty much. And it's not a good thing for us to be that way, by the way. We know that. But it's just the way we're made up. So it's something I struggle with all the time, because people say, share. You know, share. If you're struggling with something, share it. That's what we're here for. And I'm the guy that's always telling them that. Share it with me. You know, I'm here for you. But I don't do it.
You know what, though? When I think you're like me in that, when you do open up in any way, it really comes out.
Oh, yeah, it does.
You know, it's like you might resist it. But once the floodgates open,
you're right. You're absolutely
right. It all comes
out.
And then you feel better. Even if it's only a little bit better, you always feel better to get these things off of your chest, to get that these words out, you know, because it's the beginning of a healing in some way.
It's true.
Let me give this number again. National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. This is 24/7, always. Somebody. There's even an online chat if you'd rather not talk.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
So it's 800-273-8255, 24 hours, and the online chat is also 24 hours. Just search suicide prevention, and that's the first thing that comes up. You won't even be able to go any further, really. It's right smack dab in the middle of your face and the screen of your phone.
That's good.
That's what you need
to do.
Do it. But also, sometimes talking to somebody you really care about and trust is a good thing.
Yeah, if you
have
somebody,
they'll understand you a little better.
Definitely.
But there's been just one of those things to remember is that where you are, somebody else has been there and has made it out.
Mm-hmm.
And for every one or two that do it, there's probably 150 or 200 that don't. And you need to be one of those people that just wait the extra minute, wait the extra hour, wait the extra day, and then hopefully you come through.
Yeah.
And find yourself.
That's true.
Any thoughts, Larry, before we leave? It's a tough subject to talk about today, but I feel like...
How much time we got? 2 minutes?
2 minutes. Very good.
You're always good at the 2 minute mark. Why? Yeah. What is it about
that
magic
mark?
I just
like to get into the wrap up.
I see. I mean, we say it all the time, so this is almost cliche, but it's not really, because it's a very serious subject. But just always try and be aware of those people around you. Especially family members and those that you care most about, be sensitive to them. Try and be sensitive, even though it's not your nature to be that way. That's about all I can say about that.
I would like to thank you, because you're one person that does recognize when something is wrong, and you come in right out and say, like, you know, I'm here if you need anything to talk about. And then you've been that way since I've known you. You are one of those people that do try to help solve the problem and help and support. And I know there are a lot of people out there that are willing to do that as well, and they just might not know to where to begin or that they need to be that person. But find it within yourself to be that person for somebody close to you, because there's a chance, and most likely somebody you know is going through that depression.
I would say there's a
almost
very
every
good
one of us knows somebody close to them who's dealing with it. So recognize who that person might be, or all of them, and at least say, I'm here to tell you, if you ever need anything, I want to be the person you call.
And look for that moment. I guarantee you'll find it.
Thank you to everybody for listening to the show, and thanks for listening to our conversation about a very difficult subject, but a very important one nonetheless. And please help prevent suicide. Do your part. And if you are someone struggling with suicide, reach out to somebody who cares about you, or at least go to the prevention hotline and talk to somebody, because you, regardless of what you might think, are very important to everyone around you. And you're needed here.
Absolutely.
Don't leave before it's your time.
Absolutely.
We'll see you back here again next week, another edition of People Helping People on Volley 92.3 FM.